Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
So welcome to this special edition of the Sunday Roast on Sunday, the 7th of June. My name's Kevin Hornsby, and I'm the only one presenting today. So that's unusual. And the reason being is Phil's driving very fast supercars around a track in France, I think it is. So he's unable to make it. And that's where we're at. So let's get on with it. I'm coming all the way from Hawaii. I was on a beautiful tour of Hawaii a couple of days ago. Fantastic. Some of the scenery here is amazing. The waterfalls and even the coastal places are just fantastic. So if you ever get a chance, come and visit Hawaii. It really is truly remarkable. Anyway, we're going to go straight into our guest. Our first guest is Arkell, good friend of ours, Rory Harding. So roll that tape. So our guest today is Rory from Arkell Resources, Rory Harding, who has taken on this prospect down in Namibia. And we've had some highlights from the recent RNS, two district mineralization styles defined, drilling program accelerated, 1,500 meters of RC drilling, trenching and sampling commencing what was next week, which was probably this week, 2,500 meters of ULG drilling program to commence in Q3 2026, multiple additional payload channel and ULG targets, stronger ULG potential on EP8290, high surface sample grades, downhole GRS survey of legacy drill holes on EPL8995, is ongoing. So Rory, looks like you've got a project on your hands here. Tell us a bit more.
Yeah, good to speak to you again. So yes, we put out this RNS just a couple of weeks ago now, and we are fully underway now on that second phase exploration program. So excited by what we found, or our interpretations from the geophysics. We've got lots of targets. We've got this paleo channel target, as you mentioned, in license 8995 to the east, which we're going to accelerate our drilling on. And hopefully, yeah, by sort of 26th, 27th of June, I think, is the contractors will mobilize there. We've also got a very large target of ULG. This is alaskite type mineralization on that southern license, which looks like a pretty large assemblage. So we're going to trench away the surface there, map that, sample that, and then move to drilling there too. And you know, we've got lots of analogous targets across the other licenses as well. So yeah, we're really excited and looking forward to kicking into the next gear here at Arkell.
Yeah, so from your perspective, what is going to be key in terms of turning this into a resource that is commercial?
So on the eastern paleo channel, that's the one we're going to drill first. We're kind of doing the design of the program at the moment, exactly where we're going to place those holes. We're waiting for the downhole survey of some historical holes before we finalize that, because that's just going to help us hone in a little bit more. And we're hoping for a decent amount of fill in those channels. They're relatively shallow, those paleo channels. They can run in places, you know, up to sort of 20 meters, other places sort of 5 meters, 10 meters, etc. So we hope for like a kind of, we know what the profile looks like a little bit from the couple of lines of the horizontal LUPM and some of the other interps, but we're hoping for a decent amount of channel fill. We're hoping for uranium in the calcrete in those channels, and then if you look at the scale of them, that's not an enormous paleo channel to the east there, but in theory it's large enough. If it were mineralized through and the channels were filled, you might have 30 to 50 million pounds in an area of that size in a paleo channel in a good scenario. And then we've got some other paleo channels up to on the northern license at 8 298 or what looked like paleo channels. So we've got to go run some horizontal loop EM up there as well, map those, and then do kind of similar work. And then we would get to drilling those as well, presumably, as well as some other sampling, probably before that. We've got another paleo channel on the 8995 license to the west of where we've got the ULG target. So we've got a few paleo channels, and you know, pretty substantial. That western one would be, I think, around 600 hectares. So it's quite large. And again, if it was mineralized, and you know, it would be, you could have a potentially quite a large paleo channel resource there. And then we've got these ULGs, which are, this is the hard rock uranium, if you like, the uriniferous leucogranites. And we've got what looks like a pretty large assemblage on the southern license, and you know, kind of mirror images of that to the north, if that stacks up. So the idea there is, when we know there's uranium on surface in all these places, we know it from the previous sampling, we know it from, you know, the radiometrics we've done, the thorium uranium ratios, to make sure that, you know, it is uranium rather than other radioactive elements. And then when we sample that, you know, we'll get to drilling it. And I mean, if it's, you know, if that is a, you know, 1,000, you know, sort of 1,000 meters by 700 meters, and that's an assemblage, and that goes to depth, that's a pretty substantial tonnage there, if that's mineralized, you know, the whole way through. So
I
you know,
suppose that's
lots
the
of work to
question.
do.
In these paleo channels, how when you talk about a channel, how deep can they go?
They can go, as I said, you know, kind of, I suppose, well, they can go 20, 30 meters, probably where we are. And from the horizontal loop, you know, I think the we went to a depth around 17 meters, right? You've got sort of 5 meters, 17 meters spread over like kind of a relatively broad area, right? So there's a kind of, think of a wide, relatively kind of shallow river. However, what we'll actually do is we'll actually drill into the basement rock as well in some of these holes, because what our neighbors have found, originally they just used to drill to the basement, right, to the riverbed, if you like. And then they actually found, when they went a little bit deeper, there's uranium in the basement rock as well. So, you know, sometimes, you know, 5, 10 meters, you know, into the basement. So we'll also be doing that. So you know, we'll see what we've got, but we're certainly a lot of targets to get our hands around. And you know, excited to accelerate the drilling program. Originally, we said we'd kind of be starting that sort of, you know, September, October, until we drill, you know, and here we are, you know, end of June, we're going to be drilling. So
Very good.
that's exciting.
I mean, obviously, that phase one program identified targets, as you said, across two mineralization styles. So if that RC drilling on the paleo channel, you know, once it concludes, or if it's not going the way you like, how quickly could you pivot capital and rigs to go to those leucogranite targets?
These are RC, this is RC drilling. No point doing anything other than RC drilling on paleo channels. And you know, we would, so what's the process? It's a little bit different than you might have with other types of exploration with this type of uranium, because you actually not, it's not like you're sort of taking, yes, you're logging your samples and you're looking at them, but you don't necessarily have to wait for an assay, because you, as you take the sections from the RC, you know, kind of what turns it to a pulp effectively, and you bag it, you're able to stick the gun on them and see what levels of you know, thorium, potassium and uranium you've got. So you kind of know what's, you know, kind of roughly in the samples. That it sort of lets you kind of selectively then assay, which cuts some of the assay cost. And then we also do GSR, the gamma ray spectrometry downhole, not necessarily in real time, but the contractor follows behind when they have availability, and then they kind of log the hole. So you kind of get a radiometric kind of survey of the hole even whilst you're waiting for assay. And then when you do get the assays, you get to match those up. So that makes future exploration really, really easy and really efficient,
It must
because you
be,
actually,
yes, I was going to say it must be quite fun on a personal level as well, because you get the sort of indication from that before you get the assays back. And so you kind of know whether you should be excited or not
That's
long before
right.
you even
You
get
know,
the lab back.
the assay is always the real truth, but like, at least you get some decent indications, and you know, and the guys can call you and go, yeah, we gunned uranium in every hole. Okay, thank you. Nice.
We're all wearing sort of yellow bomber suits. That's a good sign.
Yeah, so that's what we'll do. And then, you know, if we wanted to, your question about can you kind of pivot and move over and drill some other holes? Yes, I mean, you could move the contractor, you know, over if you wanted. I don't see that happening. I think we'd finish the 1500 meters we're going to drill on the paleo channels, and then we will be trenching that ULG target in the meantime. So that should be starting today, that trenching. The guys have already been out in the field and doing the mapping and sampling work, but I think the machine is on site to start the trenching today. And we're not going into the rock, we're just removing all the surface cover because you lose a radiometric signal with really about 30 centimeters of cover. So in some cases you might be going 30 centimeters, 20 centimeters. In other cases, you might be going a couple of meters, but effectively scrape away that sand cover, and it's almost like a pie crust as well. It's something called gypcrete. So you sort of scrape that away, and then we'll be able to see the rock. The guys will be able to identify, okay, this is ULG here. There's not ULG here. This is where it is. This is the extent of it. Be able to again use the handheld devices that show gamma in the field and be able to see where there's uranium and where there's not. They'll take some samples as well from that as they're going along the extent of it, and then that will go for assay, and then that will then drive what we do in a drilling program on those ULGs. And those ULG holes will be much deeper, so we'll probably do a couple. Because we want to see to what depth it goes to, and is it stacked? Is it kind of is it interlaced with marbles? What does it look like in terms of a kind of a full body? And so they might go down to 200 meters, 250 meters, a couple of holes. Maybe we'll do some at 50 meters and 100 meters as well. So and that will be RC as well. Really, for a cost basis, I think in like an ideal world, you would definitely just want to drill core, like always, because you can understand a lot
Yeah,
more from core.
but
But
it's a lot more expensive. So,
and availability as well, right?
yeah. Well, I was this is my other kind of log. I want to hand back to Kevin in a sec, but presumably all of this getting sent to ALS in Johannesburg would be my guess.
We will. It could go to ALS, but we'll actually use ACT Labs.
Oh,
We
fine.
work for
Yeah, I
them. We
just
work. Yeah.
yeah, I just it's simply because it just no matter which lab you send it to, just everyone seems to be almost overwhelmed the amount of material, and it's kind of timelines. How long do you reckon it will take realistically to get the assays back? Because it is sort of out of your hands a little bit, but I think it'll be a little bit longer than what people
Well, we're probably
think.
a little bit busier this year than last year, but I'd still argue last year was kind of a pretty active year for the industry, and they were quite busy, and there's a lot going on in Namibia. But they prepare the so ACT Labs prepare the pulps, as do ALS, of course. They would be the two labs we would use in any case. But ACT Labs prepare the pulps in there in Windhoek, and then they go by aircraft to remember the name of the place. Is it Lancaster in Canada? But that's effectively where the lab is. And the last time we sent samples there last year, a relatively decent turnaround time. I think it was probably 3 weeks, kind of end to end. So not terrible. But as I said, we'll get an indication before all of the assays come back as well, which is we and once we match up assays with radio with kind of gamma signature, we can then be start
Is
looking.
that indication that your workers are all glowing green?
Well, you hope that doesn't happen, but no, it's these are, I guess, from a it's a good question, because actually people always ask me about that. What's it like being out there with all this radioactivity? I mean, essentially the kind of the background radiation, if you like, isn't the same as what you kind of envisage with kind of concentrated radiation, from whatever, an X-ray or something like that, or something that might actually
We're not
cause a lot of harm.
talking Iranian stockpiles of enriched uranium here.
Yeah, well, no, exactly. So, and these are relatively low grades, I guess, to speak to grades as well, right? And what it could mean in the paleo channel. What are you hoping for? I mean, you've got Maranika to the north that had a resource grade previously that was super low, which was around 80 ppm. They upgraded it recently, the number off the top of my head, but I think it went up to 160 ppm. They upgraded the resource grade there at Maranika in the last few months that they announced. And then at Tricopa, you've got 100, and in the paleo channel you've got 120 ppm. So it's a relatively low grade, big tonnage, but kind of easy to mine things shallow in these paleo channels. In the ULGs, you want it because you've got a hard rock, you want to hope for a higher grade. And yes, you'll get areas that are in the thousands of ppm, but you hope for something like, I guess, Bannerman's a good example, right? A couple of 100 ppm in these ULGs is like, you could have a mine. especially if they're not webbed with marbles. And from what we can see with these ULGs, they don't have that as well, which is a good thing, because you could actually have a mine with a resource with a lower grade when you haven't
And
got a marble.
also there is processing nearby, so you don't have all of those extra costs in terms of setting up a situation.
Yeah, well, I've been, saying this before. Namibia is quite kind of special country for uranium. There aren't many like it that has that level of infrastructure, and not only active mines but new mines being developed where parties would want to cooperate on infrastructure, on processing. And of course there is infrastructure that can be used that's already there, and certainly in terms of all the sort of roads and power and networks and all that stuff is all very good. But yeah, in terms of processing, if you did have a resource and you wanted to move it forward towards mining, you've not only got active neighbors, but you've got new projects in development where everyone's always interested in improving economics. So where you can do that and where you can share infrastructure, that's advantageous.
Yeah, very good. Well, Rory, we look forward to speaking to you again as these results come out. And and if anybody didn't understand any of the RC or GLRs or whatever, then we apologize.
Yeah, it's all right. You must stop me, Kevin,
Okay, next time I'll stop
ask me
you.
to explain further, which I'm happy
So,
to
in
do.
other words, we have diamond drilling, which is where a full core comes out the ground, and RC drilling, which is really where just because the material is, it tends to be lighter, if you like, and not rock, it comes out as just a mixture almost, I think. Is that for
It's like
summation?
it comes out as a dust, basically, just like flies out as a dust rather than, so it's kind of pulverizing it as it's grinding it away rather than cutting it out in a core.
And then
Worth
you bag it, and subsequently you know roughly where it's come from, and that's how it's assessed.
mentioning though as well, Kevin, I'm going to do an investor webinar, I think, at the end of the month.
Okay,
So there'll
great.
be opportunity for Q&A. You'll be welcome to join. Don't be a heckler, please, Kevin. Don't be a heckler. But I'm looking forward to that, and kind of fielding any questions. And then the other thing I probably should mention as well, we put out another RNS next week, last week, this week, sorry, that you may have caught as well, with Hannam & Partners also coming on as a joint broker, which we're happy about. They will be putting out some good research coverage as well, and that's part of, I know that, it's good that I bring this up because it's a question that comes to me. You've appointed a new broker, are you about to finance? I say no, we're not about to finance, but we're setting out our stall for the future and making sure we've got all the best characters involved. So they're a top-notch broker, mining specialist, and great research coverage. And said, so really, it's about framing the new Arcor for the future and having all the right actors in place.
And as a final comment, just so people understand, you do have a chunk of Stone Park Zinc Project in Ireland, which has to be worth some money. So this is
That's
not
the
just a uranium play.
yeah. That's worth it. Just kind of just a touch point as well. They are drilling at the moment. So the operator's Group 11. So we own just over 20% of that asset. And yes, I mean, I think Group 11's doing very, very well with their exploration, both or at the properties surrounding us, right? And particularly at Ballywire, and they are drilling 15,000 meters over the next year and a bit there, and they're starting with 2,700 meters, which is underway right now. So the first hole, if it's not already finished, will be finished in short order, and then we look forward to having some results out of Stone Park as well. So that'll be good, and then be drilling some more holes in short order there. And the potential there, if they've got at the Carrakittle prospect, a mirror image of Palace Green, that's the Glencore neighbor next door, which is 45 million tons, which is what it kind of structurally looks like. That would also be I think transformative for Group 11, and also obviously by extension Arcor with our interest and number of other targets. I know they've been hitting copper and silver as well underneath their lead zinc horizons on their Ballywire property. So I know that that's something that we're looking out for too, and something that Group 11 and their shareholders are excited about in Stone Park is, do we have copper and silver there? We don't know. We'll see. But lots going on at Arkle, so lots to look forward to.
Very good. Would there be any possibility of them changing your shareholding in the Stone Park thing into Group 11 shares so that you actually had liquidity?
I guess those things are always conversations to be had. I think right now, because we're passive in that asset, and we have cash to fund the business and our Namibian exploration program, being super focused on that. So I think, in the future, depending where it is, I think a lot of shareholders want to see us as well, because there's always been talk of, oh, do they sell Stone Park? What are they doing, etc. Right? Right now, it's, well, we've got our partner who's drilling, some substantial meters on the property, and and let's see what comes out of that, right?
It's not the right time to sell it if you were going to make that decision, is it? Just strategically, it
No,
makes no
well, that's
sense.
right. You'd wait. You kind of like, let's see where the drill program gets to, let's kind of go through that cycle. And so, and whilst that's happening, and as I said, we are not the operator of that. It's a, I mean, some people look at it that Arkle's interest in Stone Park is, maybe worth, you could argue, the market cap of Arkle, and then all the uranium and everything else is kind of, upside on top. Or you could argue it the other way around, that that basically the uranium is kind of where the market cap is and right now, and of course there's huge upside potential there, but the Stone Park thing is just a kicker, right? If it comes in future, and you could have a nice re-rate off it if it becomes a deposit or somebody wants to buy it out.
It's quite,
It's quite
you're now subtly telling everybody that Arkle's undervalued. Well done, Ray. I think just generically though, like when you design a portfolio for yourself, you're trying to you want lots of arrows on target, right? And so when it's a specific company, if you've got two things that could pull off, then it's just easier to hold as well for investors. It just is. If you're going after uranium and you've got Stone Park as well, there's two chances that it could go extraordinarily well rather than just one. It just makes it easier. But the other thing is obviously there's virtually no uranium plays in London. That's the other thing you've got going for you structurally. Are just people who want to diversify their portfolios down here. What else is there? Not very much.
I think people are picking up the name, him getting approached by certain people, even from America, actually, and kind of various investors and people we're talking to saying, okay, how many uranium plays are there on London, right? What's out there? And there's very, very few. So yeah, we hope that we become a company that's always mentioned in the same breath as uranium. And London Stock Exchange, because there's a small handful, and of course you've got the large cap, companies and main board ones in the big Kazatomprom, the big Kazakh producer, world's largest producer, and then you've got Yellowcake, the which is a play on physical uranium, which is doing quite well, obviously. I think the Cameco just put out, they do publish their spot prices and their contract prices. They just put it out last week. I think it was $94 a pound on contract price, which is just above spot price, which I think is, let me look at my trading screen, where's spot price today? 85. And the long-term contract price, I'm always telling people, is like more important than the
Well, of
spot
course it
price.
is. That's what people are paying for, isn't it?
So that's the because that's it, right? That's what's contracted long term, and that's what's meaningful. So these prices are great. Uranium industry is looking good. Theme is accelerating. I said very few players, and I think Arkle now we're on to a sniff of a few things on the exploration wise. I think there's lots of potential to re-rate this thing if we have exploration success in the next phase now.
Very good. Rory, thanks for your time, and we look forward to speaking to you in the not too distant.
Thank you. Thanks, Kevin. Thanks, Charles.
So we welcome our second guest, Colin Bird, from Extract Resources, talking about the Amgas progress and Silver King. So have a listen to what he has to say.
How are things going, Colin? After the news yesterday about the antinomy in Morocco, give us a bit of an update of how you see that all panning out.
But we're going very well across the board. Thank you very much, Kevin. Very busy times, very busy times. I'm delighted with Amgas. There's some pictures on my Twitter site where you'll see how we've cleaned up the place and got it really ready for production. But of course, the good news yesterday was we announced the grant of the Amgas mining license. And we're going to take the processing plant out of Casablanca to right to site to Amgas. The logic being that in the past, we used to, before we entered Wildstone, the material would be picked up, taken to Casablanca, put through a small plant, and then sold onwards as an intermediate product. That intermediate product is really a lively market at the moment. As you know, the fundamentals for antimony, they're very, very good indeed. You've only got to look at the price charts. So we decided to, the intent is to put a flotation plant in the longer term. And the intent is to set up right on mine, a gravity separation plant. And that will have the benefit of treating not only our own material, we've got much, but local artisanal miners. And so we've got the benefit of our own material, plus artisanal miners. We're producing this intermediate 10 to 20% antimony. And I'm going to make sure there's some pictures around for our shareholders and would-be shareholders to see that, antimony is often a byproduct, Kevin. It's not always a prime product. Here we're looking at raw antimony, and normally the when you get that situation, the vein is as thick as your fingernail,
Yeah.
But we're looking at big thick sections of antimony, very discernible. The more work we do, the more galleries, they call them galleries there, you'd probably call them tunnels, I'd call them adits, but the industry term for when you've got a sort of hillside topography, you use the topographer end for entry and chase the vein. The more work that we do, the more we find. I think the interesting bit, Kevin, is they're not sort of rough old mining, very dangerous. They're not the safest place you've been in. We're dressing them all up and, barring them down and making them safe. But some of them are from the old French days when the French were working antimony. And what you see is quite sophisticated tunnels, high quality work, sophisticated tunnels, which won't be difficult to rehabilitate. Having said that, the more we see and the sort of orientation of the antimony, the more we see of the initial, they called it open cast, I call it quarrying, the more we see the large face that they presented, everything seems to be migrating to that face. So it's my opinion, shared obviously by the team, my opinion that we will be able to go straight into quarrying. And why, first of all, make the face, make it safe, bench it. So as you're actually not got big runs where people are working anywhere near underneath. And then I'd rather think that instead of going into the galleries, into the tunnels, I think that we'll be doing open cut mining. And of course, the, shall we call them the old timers, that's what they call the artisans, previous artisans, they just chased pure antimony, what they could see. The Associated Brecher has got nice grades of antimony in it as well. So even the tunnels, should we work them, will be high grade, not our grade, they will be 2, 3, 4% antimony in support of main vein antimony with the overriding quarry ruling thing. So 70,000 ton a year plant we're talking about is peanuts for the amount of antimony we've got. We're doing our marketing agreement, so we've got full circle. I think always when you're in these specialty metals, you've got to make sure you're full circle with the marketing tied up.
Yeah.
So
So on the 70,000 tons, Colin, are you expecting sort of what, 2, 3, 4, 5% antimony going through that 70,000?
start at 2, 3, 4, start at that. But the product we'll be selling will be between 10, 12 to best, the best stuff will be 20. It's an
But
immediate intermediate
you're
product.
talking about what, 2 to 3,000 tons of antimony per annum if you use that 70,000?
Yeah, you've got to take recovery into consideration. You've then got to take the upgrade into the optimization of the upgrade of whether you're selling 10, whether you're selling 20, what the market's like. But in terms of cash, it will be a very nice cash earner between ourselves and our partners at Wildstone. We've got extremely good partners there as well working with us, Kevin. Very, very good partners.
Yeah, I mean, some of the guys were running it through AI, and it was showing that even Extract's portion of this could be $25 to $35 million a year once this is rocking and rolling. Does that seem feasible or not?
You know how much they don't like us to make forecasts, but use your AI, use your, we're talking with real figures here. We're talking about real percentages. So your estimate, I wouldn't argue with your estimate. Neither would I
Yeah.
support. Neither would I support it
you will say nothing.
because I'm not allowed to. But
Yes,
that
indeed.
antimony is basically getting scarcer and scarcer. Lots of people are reporting our new antimony finds, but as I say, a big portion of it is byproduct. Byproduct. This is prime
Yeah.
antimony. This is
And
prime
antimony,
antimony.
just so people understand, antimony is not one of those things that is quoted like copper or silver or gold in terms of a price. So what sort of price is, pure antimony? I know you don't even get pure antimony, but
Well,
per
no,
ton.
it comes in so many product types. It's two pages, but if you're to get the ingots, you may be talking about $53,000 a ton. You might be talking then the sort of stuff we'll be doing. We ought to be in the 23, 25,000. Let's say 20 to 25,000. And of course, some of it we'll buy in and upgrade. Other stuff we'll mine ourselves. But it's very, very broad product type market. So you can't generalize on saying like copper, oh, copper's 14,000 ton. When you're talking about antimony, you're talking about specific products right across the market. When I use the words for our particular product, our saleable product, intermediate. So you can do what you like with it afterwards,
Yeah.
Kevin. You can do what you like with it, but $20,000 is about the right figure. So
And of course,
you're mining very valuable stuff, of which we've already mined quite a bit, ready for production.
I mean, that was one of the things I was going to suggest, that there was also quite a lot of stockpile already on the surface, when you took this project over, as well
Well,
as the mining stuff.
not really. The stockpile wasn't there. There was a lot of rubble on the place. In fact, we had to clean up. I guess that was a negative rather than a positive. But what we've done our own work there, and the piles now are into intermediate and high grade, and we're ready for the operation to start. The work we've got to do now is to relocate, and we're in the middle of relocating the plant from Casablanca down to Amgas, so we're into production, into sales.
So I asked you this question a few months back as well, I think. Are we going to be seeing antimony concentrate being sold by the end of 2026?
This product, the one we're talking about now, the intermediate, 26, is basically a fail-safe target. I'm hoping that we'll get this plant erected in third quarter. We'll be there, but certainly by the end we'll be into intermediate saleable concentrate production. Certainly, I'm rather hoping to beat that target. The target you've got there is a very conservative internal target, so as not to overstate a situation. Internally, we wish to be that and beat it significantly.
Very good. And I'm not going to ask you about Silver King, but I think from the conversations we've had previously, it's watch this space. And you're going to bring us up to date on Silver King and then the not too distant future.
Oh, absolutely. It's all systems go there as well. All systems go. Yeah, absolutely. We're made very, very, very nice progress, and I hope to update the market in the not too distant future.
Very good. Well, we'll do a more comprehensive interview when that Silver King report comes out. And good luck. And let's hope we've got two producing assets by the end of 2026. And you've got Bushranger in the background. It's got to be worth something at $14,000 copper.
Absolutely, Kevin. Yeah, isn't it nice when you think of a junior mining company having two producing units and 1.3 million tons in the bank? Albeit that 1.3 million tons in the bank is subgrade, doesn't quite make the grade. But you've been in the business as long as I have to know what doesn't make the grade today makes it tomorrow. And if we look at the fundamentals for copper, the short supply, if we look at the Australian market, their thirst for new projects. And here we've got an homegrown one, 50 kilometres from Sydney in the Lachlan Fold. It has to have value, doesn't it?
Yeah, and we talked about it obviously over the years, but it's open at all ends, and it's not just 1.3 million tons of contained copper, as we well know. But that's all we can say is as we speak.
Absolutely, absolutely. And rest assured, I'm working hard on finding the best way forward to monetize that particular asset. And Silver King, as I say, is roaring along. So it's all systems go, Kevin. Okay.
Very good. We look
Thanks.
forward to catching up with you in the not too distant future regarding Kendrick, Besant, African Pioneer, and Extract and Galileo, because we've got movement in all of them, I'm sure. And yeah, good luck.
Yep, we're heads down in every single company. There's a story to tell and to be told. So good days, and as always in this business, the train seems to be arriving at the station at the same time. But I'm an happy station master. Thank you very much, Kevin. Thank you. Nice to talk to you.
Yeah, all the best, Colin.
Okay, today I thought I'd do something different. Not just talk about the movers and shakers. I alluded to it last week on the roast, where I said I had stocks that I think could 10x, if you like. So 10 baggers, which is the name of our Facebook page, 10 baggers. So I've created a list of 10 baggers, which I believe, even from their current positions, can 10 bag. The time frame, I'm going to leave that one up to you. I believe that these have a good chance. Now, even if we get 2, 3, 4 of these to 10 bag, it's going to make a massive difference to your portfolio. So yeah, listen up and hear what I have to say. I have done them in an order, and that order means something. And the one thing I want you to keep in mind when we're discussing this is revenues, okay? Because at the end of the day, businesses can be devised, valued on many different criteria. But if there are physical pounds coming in, revenue coming in that is profitable, then this is really where I think the valuation can easily be validated, if you like. Okay, so we're going to start with number one. Number one is Extract Resources. Again, just exactly what I've said to you about revenue. Going to start having revenue, if they haven't already started, at Silver King, the asset in Zambia. It is a copper gold. I think it's a VMS system, because effectively it's a very high grades of copper and silver. Glencore was involved in this. It was one of the first mines that was ever done in Zambia, from an artisanal point of view. There is two parts to this project. The first part is the small mine, which is what is now in situ and working. And we had the sulfides and the oxides. The scenario was that the sulfides, I think it was, had to go to the Chinese to be processed. The oxides are then going to be processed through the plant on site. This should produce 3,000-4,000 tons a year of contained copper. Now, if that does that, how much money is that? That is a lot of money, okay? It is currently $40-50 million. Now, Extract only has 35% of that. So again, you do the maths. How much can they be producing? Obviously, that's the revenue, so you're going to have to maybe stick that in half by the time the processing costs are involved. But 35% of, let's say, $20 million is going to be a significant amount. You know, you're talking $5 to $8 million of free cash flow that is profit. On top of that, you've then got the antimony in Morocco at Amgas. That is a much bigger project than everybody realizes. They've just got a 10-year mining license. And again, I think by the end of this year, we're going to see concentrate being sold. It's being sold for $20,000, $25,000 a ton as a concentrate. The 70,000-ton processing facility per annum, let's assume it does its nameplate as in 70,000. You're then talking about the grade. What is the grade? Is it 2? Is it 3? Is it 4? Based on that, you're talking about 1,500 tons of concentrate all the way up to at 4%. You're talking about nearly 3,000 tons of concentrate. So at 3,000 tons of concentrate, you're talking about revenues of $75 million a year. At the bottom end, you're probably talking about 35 million tons a year. They own 80% of this project. Obviously, there are costs involved that we have to slice off. So even if we slice it in half, you are talking about somewhere in the region, let's pick a number in the middle, $50 million of revenue, $25 million then of free cash flow, which they will receive $20 million per annum. Now, that is only the start. I don't think there's any way it's going to stay at 70,000 tons a year. It could well be a much bigger project as we go through. But that's $20 million of free cash flow. You add that to the 5 to 7 to $8 million of free cash flow, depending on copper and gold prices in Silver King, and you've got a 25 to $30 million free cash flow company. How much is that worth? Okay. Now, on top of that, you're then in a situation where you've got Bushranger, 1.3 million tons of contained copper in Australia. The scenario is quite simple that at this level of copper price, it has a value. So let's see. So all of those things combined, I put this at number one. I'm in my confidence ratio of will this become a 10 bagger? I believe Extract will. Okay. So moving on to the next one, which is Active Energy. Again, I'm going to keep banging this drum. It's all about revenues. The revenue income has now started. It's AI driven, AI centers in Dubai, in or the UAE as a whole. They've now started talking to Bahrain as well. They've already signed a deal with Saudi Arabia. You know, these guys want it to be a center, regardless of the current war and the situation that's going on at the minute. They want it to be a center for technology. This is the shovels of that technology. We've got low cost energy, signed agreements, and subsequently they're pairing them up with the people and the ability to do that. There's also a bit of a kicker there with Bitcoin as well, in terms of the deal that they're doing with a NASDAQ rated company. And for me, I just can't see how those revenues aren't going to escalate fast and subsequently allow this to move from a, you know, few million pound market cap into the 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100 million market cap, which will mean it's 10, tenfolded or 10 bagged. So that's my next one, Active Energy. The next one is Ethereum. Now, why Ethereum? Ethereum currently has started the trading platform that it has in Rwanda, mainly on the back of tantalum. Tantalum, as we know, is required for many, many different things, but you know, whether it be smartphones, whether it be conductivity in AI centers, a lot of different things, and it is in short supply. So their ability to trade that and increase that revenue on a regular basis, I think, is there and is going to continue to increase. So that's the cornerstone of where we are now. Now, the interesting thing is we have a 4 million pound market cap here. 4 million pounds, in fact, probably slightly less than 4 million, but 4 million pound market cap. For this to 10 bag, we only need to get to 40 to 50 million pounds market cap. How much revenue do we need from the trading or profit from the trading? A couple of million pounds a year on a trading platform would put this at a market cap of at least 10 times that, which would be 24 million pounds or $24 million, sorry, depending on if we talk about dollars or pounds for the trading, but the trading is mainly done in dollars. So we'd have $24 million. Then we've got all the different deals that are going on with the tantalum that they've got at HCK1 in Rwanda, which was lithium but also tantalum, which basically can be dug up from the hills. You've got big options going out on in Botswana for the copper, and you've got silver and copper in Morocco that Lithosquare are getting involved in. Lithosquare, big AI mining company now, basically trying to use technology to find the right resources. They're in the situation now where they've just raised 25 million and they've just done another deal with Ethereum for 15% of all of the eight licenses that they chose to spend another €1 million. So again, what does that value all those licenses at? That values all those licenses at 8 to €10 million. So if that is the case, then we're now stacking that up at 35 million or more in terms of its valuation. So we're getting very close, and that's without the trading actually coming on. If the trading works as I anticipate, I think in the next 12 to 24 months, the trading will probably produce the current market cap, which is £4 million in profit. 24 months from now, that is my prediction. And obviously, these are all just predictions. So as you see from the top three, it's revenue, 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 and then the potential upside on what's happening with the assets that they hold. Okay, the next one is Fulcrum Metals. Why? Just absolute blue sky in terms of the processing of tailings, mainly for gold, but for other assets as well. In Canada, in an area that has been mined galore, and there are tailings everywhere. They've just secured more tailings. I just can't see how this isn't going to just keep on motoring. Once they get that initial plant going, which will allow them to test and to understand all the other different projects, then that will then allow them to then do deals on those projects and probably put processing plants on each one of the projects so that they can then start to create massive revenues. Again, the revenues aren't there right now, but if you have some, forward vision, then there almost isn't a way where they're not going to have those revenues because they're involved with some big players. And yeah, I just can't see how it isn't going to happen. They have funding in place now as well, for that initial processing plant. So yeah, again, I come back to the point. Time frames are not necessarily the same in all of these, but for me, Fulcrum Metal is going to be one of those companies that you think we should put more of that now. Okay, the fifth one, Energy Pathways. Everybody was waiting for this license to come. The license came, share price went up, share price has come back down again. For me, in very, very buyable territory, this is going to be a £1 billion company. I just don't see how it won't be. The connections it's already got with Siemens and with all the bigger companies that are going to be helping them to process this. They've got government backing. It's a special project in the UK. The UK needs this to work. And then the other thing that excites me about Energy Pathways is its ability to duplicate itself. So this isn't going to be a one-off project in the northwest of England. This, I believe, can be multiplied time and time and time and time again. Why do I like it as well? It's going to kick off huge amounts of revenue. Revenue, 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 revenue. Okay, so that's number five. Number six, Bazant Resources. You need to turn into a believer for this one because everybody seems to not believe that this funding is coming. I'm telling you now, funding's coming, and I don't know that for sure, but I'm believing that the funding is coming. The project is moving forward. The project is being built, and within a few months, literally, we're going to have a gold and copper concentrate coming out of the ground at Hope and Gorup. But the bigger play, and why I think this will be a penny stock, a 1p stock at least, is that the ability for them to expand the project and become 25,000 ton project per annum of contained copper and not just a Hope and Gorup size project, even though that is very, very good and kicks off. I think the last figures were 30 to 40 to $50 million of free cash flow, all from an open pit. Again, I don't know why it's sitting at the market cap that it is. I believe it's going to 10 times over the next, I think, happy to say, year to 18 months. I'd be surprised if it doesn't. Okay, another one in Namibia is African Pioneer. Now, this moves away slightly from the revenue, but only from the point of view that I think it's about a year behind Bazant. You've got the Ongombo project there, which, from a contained copper point of view, is slightly bigger than Hope and Gorup. I think when the action starts moving on this one, it's going to be the same deal as Bazant. Very small market cap. Same sort of thing as Aterian. African Pioneer has a market cap of about £5 million, 5.5 million, I think it is. 55 million market cap for a miner that's going to be producing copper and gold, with copper at $14,000 a ton, gold at 4,500 per ounce. It makes a lot of sense. Makes a huge amount of sense. So that was number seven. Number eight is Ajax Resources. Different part of the world. Now we're talking about South America. Plethora of assets. But the real key for me in terms of Ajax is their tie-up now with Appian. Appian want to feed them deals, and that's going to allow them, I think, to become, hopefully a producer, which is where the revenue comes in again, and then subsequently be able to trade deals as well for serious project. Ippolito is the CEO, young guy, wants to prove himself, and has a big cut of the pie himself. Confident over time from this low level now of, I think you can buy them at the minute for about 6, 6.5p. It's going to do good. So that was number eight. Number nine is Kendrick Resources. Now, if you look at Kendrick Resources, it's already done 35 times. So it's already in the 10 bagger list. But can Kendrick do 10 bags from here? Can Kendrick be worth 85p? A firm yes. And if it happens, it's going to happen faster than we think, because somebody's going to want this huge resource. We had news today about the other part of the project, which we weren't even counting in the $400 million, that it's not been included. But ultimately, it could be as big because of the quantity as the initial project. If that is the case, you could be looking at 800 million to a billion MPV. Now, no matter what way you want to look at it, somebody's going to buy that for a percentage of that MPV, probably somewhere in the region of 30, 40, 50% of that MPV. So if that is the case, you're looking at a market cap of $400 to $500 million. If that is the case, then Kendrick is likely to 10 bag. Okay. And then the final one that I put on my list, which again, people will be like, what is he talking about? It's already up 20 times from its IPO, is Delta Gold Technology. The valuation of this is just over 100 million pounds at the minute. The valuation of any of the quantum computing companies in America are in excess of $1 billion. They now have four different patents, three from Penn State, one from Toronto University. I fully expect that they're going to expand, as I called it in my last interview with Michael, the triangle, so that we have Canada, the US, and the UK involved in this situation. So I can't see anything but this being, creating more and more and more momentum as they get closer and closer to things that can improve the whole system from start to end of the quantum computing situation. They only need to find something small, and it will be worth hundreds of millions, if not billions. So again, what's the time frame on that one now? I don't know, but I do believe it's going to 10 bag even from here. So they're the 10 that, if they all do well, and I'm happy to say invested in them all, that I'm going to be a very happy man if that works out. Okay, now there are two or three more that you need to keep your eye out for, but they're not on the market yet. We've got another business coming from the Guardsmen, which were the Delta Gold guys. So keep your eye out for that one. Again, should be very interesting. We've got a Tau play. It's going to be called Tau AI coming to the market in the next while. And again, I think it's going to be very attractively priced. And I'm a big fan of Tau in general, and I think it could do extremely well. Astrid nearly made this 10, but they were probably in 11th or 12th place. And then we've got another IPO that's coming from the Michin camp. It's called Hawk Copper, and it's going to be a porphyry copper play. And size-wise and quantum, this could be a very big tier one copper asset. So it's looking very exciting. So there's three just to keep in the back of your mind, that will probably come later this year, which I also believe have got huge potential to 10 back. Okay, so I'll wrap it up there. Hopefully that was food for thought for you on those 10 stocks. From a football point of view, season's over now. Arsenal unfortunately lost in the Champions League. Yeah, for all you Arsenal fans, it was definitely a penalty, but you didn't get it, unfortunately. And then you didn't come through with the penalties again, unfortunately. World Cup now beginning in a few days' time. We've just got 10 days, I think, before the opening ceremony, maybe even less. And let's see how it all goes. England, Scotland, Ireland, I think, are in there as well. And many other countries, because with this the first World Cup with 48 teams. So I think we might have quite a few goals in that first section, but let's see how it all goes. Anyway, again, press that smash or that like button and follow button on YouTube if you're listening on YouTube. And yeah, again, thanks for your time for us able to run this business because you guys listen. And yeah, have a great weekend, everybody.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.